Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the December 17 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County and Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Well, Greg Johnson and Matt Bennett, let's start the discussion this way. There were a lot of things that had been happening in the marketplace for the week, and we still have one more day left. However, we've gone down to some lows, Matt, in both the corn and the soybeans, and then had a really good day on Thursday, especially the action in the bean pit. Can you summarize that for me, please?
Yeah, you know, obviously on Wednesday we had kind of a rough day, I think, on corn, a little relatively speaking, it was a little worse than beans. And then we come in here again on Thursday, and the market wasn't trading very good. We were making some new lows, and then all of a sudden the soybean market turns around and finishes up 14 and a half cents. It's, kind of a sell the rumor, buy the fact type thing, I think, with the Argentina currency devaluation. And some people were stepping in, probably doing a little bit of bargain hunting. I think, you know, the funds have been awfully short going into the end of the year. There's been speculation that there was going to be people step in and maybe reduce their shorts. And I think, you know, seasonally, lots of times we will see a little bit of a upward move towards the end of the calendar year. So I'm not real surprised that we saw some strength, but boy, it was an interesting trading day.
Did the Informa numbers come in soon enough to make a difference in the marketplace?
I think they did. They came in around 10:30 this morning, and Thursday morning, and the market started to firm up a little bit. We didn't see the major rally until closer to the close, but I do think the Informa numbers stabilized the market, especially at the contract lows that we were at in corn.
Yeah, so those numbers came in, and Informa dropped both its corn and soybean acreage for next year. I've been traveling with Darrell Good all week on the Illinois Farm Economic Summits, and I read those numbers to him as we made our way from Springfield to Mount Vernon, and he said, oh, I don't know. they're thinking the same thing I am. And he's had those numbers, or pretty close to those numbers, up on the screen all week long. Do you think this really is going to make much of a difference over time, Greg? Do you think this is where farmers are really setting themselves up for the 2016 growing season?
Well, I think there's two questions there. One, are the numbers accurate? And two, if they are, what kind of price impact will they have? You know, there's a lot of people that will discount these numbers and say that, farmers will plant corn because they love to plant corn, you know, that whole thing, and that milo acres out west will switch to corn. So will we really only plant 88.9 million acres of corn, and that which is only up 500,000 acres from last year? You know, we've been talking about needing 1 to 2 million more acres of corn all along, and if the number is right, if it's only 500,000, if we really do only plant 500,000 more acres, I think that really ratchets up the concern over weather later on this summer. That gives us a very little buffer. 1 to 2 million more acres of corn gives us a much more of a buffer in case we run into some weather problems. So if you really do believe that we're only going to plant 89 million acres of corn next year, this is a friendly number, and we should see corn trade higher to try to put a little, a little buffer in the market. But, you know, whether that's really the right number that we end up planting or not, you know, everybody's got an opinion on that.
Do you have an opinion, Matt?
You know, I think whenever you start talking acreage, it's pretty tough for a lot of producers and with these price levels. I mean, today for a while we were trading 30 cents under last year's spring insurance price in D16 corn. And so I think, you know, producers are taking a long, hard look at it. I do think there's going to be tough decisions. I do also want to point out, though, that, you know, the fall for most people in the Midwest was of such nature that a person could do any tillage that they ever dreamed of doing. And so I think there's probably a fair amount of swing acres. If the corn market would end up building in a little bit of more value than what we're looking at currently, then I think it would be tough to say that we're going to end up at 89, because when you compare corn prices to bean prices, especially relative to what we had going on last year, it sure looks like corn's the better alternative. It's just, is everybody going to be able to have the amount of cash available to plant exactly what they want?
Are you of a mind, or either of you, and we'll start with you, Matt, that 2016 corn needs to be thought about being priced out in any way at this time?
No, not necessarily. I think that there's some things that a producer can probably look at doing if they want to maybe do a little bit of risk management. I know some of the guys that we work with have been interested in maybe selling a call against some insured bushels, just simply because if the market trends sideways, maybe they can generate a nickel or a dime over time. But, you know, I'm not real interested in selling this far into the insurance price that we had last year, because I always take things back to that, because whenever we throw these price levels into a profitability spreadsheet for someone who has any level of cash rent, it's a pretty tough scenario. Now, a guy that's got paid for land or is doing a straight up 50-50 is in significantly better shape and can make money here as far as what we see, but we sure don't see that with very many of the cash rent situations.
Greg?
I think that we are looking at probably a 325 scenario downside if everything goes right next fall. And if we have some, you know, try to buy some acres, especially with this lower informer number between now and planting time, we might be able to get to 425 without weather problems. So if you have a 325 to 425 range, today we closed just slightly below $4. So no, I'm not in any mood to sell yet below $4. But as we approach that 420 to 425 level, hopefully we'll, you know, get some traders concerned about less acres, you know, maybe the outside markets, you know, whatever it takes to get us up there and try to, you know, incent farmers to plant a little bit of corn. I think then we need to use that as a selling opportunity, because eventually if everything goes right, you know, with the big carryout we had this year and, you know, enough acres next year, we could be looking at lower prices again. So I don't want to do it yet, but I don't want to get, you know, I don't want anybody to think we're wildly bullish. I think we want to have offers in and take advantage of any small rallies that we may see over the next 2 or 3 months.
Now let's roll back to the old crop. Give me conditions on the ground in Champaign County as it relates to farmer-owned crop that has been just there at this point, has been much larger than usual. Is it still remaining that way at this point? And do you see any change coming very shortly?
Well, I think the farmers are only a third sold on the old crop corn. And typically, last year, they probably weren't much more than that either. But before that, if you go back historically, they're more like a half sold by the end of the year. And this year, only a third. So definitely less corn sold than normal. But, you know, they're coming off some very good years, and it just doesn't, you know, the market seems to think that the farmers have to sell January 1 to raise money, but that doesn't seem to be the case. So I guess I'm not looking for corn to move just because it's January 1. If corn rallies, you know, 10 to 20 cents, then I think farmers will sell. But without that move, I think farmers will probably hold on a little bit longer than what the trade is thinking at this point.
Matt, you agree with this?
Yeah, I think so. You know, a lot of the guys that I'm talking to are saying that they just aren't ready to sell. I think one thing that alarms me a little bit that I hear is, you know, if we all hold out, this thing's really going to rally. And, you know, I mean, that rationale certainly would be nice. But the market doesn't really have to do anything. There is some grain moving. You know, a lot of it's being put on DP. But I think as far as when they're going to transfer ownership, it's probably anybody's guess. I'm sure there's some guys that really do need to sell in January, but I'm kind of like Greg. I don't think it is everybody by any means, and I don't look for significant transfer ownership here in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Matt, we've spent a lot of time talking about the disparity between the places that do have grain and those that don't. and how that transitions from one side of the Corn Belt, the west, to the east. Is there much of that happening at this point?
We are starting to see some trains make their way over Chicago, so from Minnesota, Nebraska, Iowa, working across Chicago into the eastern Corn Belt. So we have seen basis levels stabilize, maybe even weaken a little bit as some of that western corn has moved into the east. But I think there's a limit as to how much of that will actually happen. And so it would not surprise me once we get past maybe a January, February movement that we see basis levels start to pick back up again in the east. But I think maybe we've seen our highs for the next 30 days anyway. But after that, we really could see basis levels start to pick up again, because there really is a shortage in the east in Indiana, Ohio, and the government numbers statewide may still be too high for the production in those two states.
Do you think that once we get to the USDA reports in January, those will come down?
I think they should. Now, sometimes it takes until, you know, a revision next September before they finally figure it out. You know, if corn basis stays, you know, extremely strong all summer in the east, then, you know, at some point I think they'll figure that out, that maybe there wasn't as much corn as what they thought. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Indiana and Ohio numbers come down a little bit. Does that have an impact on the overall price? Probably not, because they may end up raising Iowa, Minnesota, and Nebraska to offset the decrease. But it will affect the basis levels, because you're just going to have to move that much more corn from the west to the east. So you're going to have to keep basis levels in the east stronger to attract that corn to move from the west.
Matt, are you concerned about corn usage, in particular the export market, at this time?
Well, you know, I think all of us are probably a little bit concerned with that. I think, you know, you look at the fact that Argentina can bring a fair amount of bushels onto the market a little more, with a little more ease than what we've been thinking all along. That definitely concerns you, their currency being devalued, and then the real relative to the dollar is very cheap. And so it makes it tough for us on the world export market. And, I've been thinking all along that once we backed off on soybean shipments a little bit, we'd be able to pick up on corn shipments. But sales really haven't indicated that we were going to be doing that at any rapid pace. So I do have some concerns, and I sure hope that sales pick up, but I'm definitely not banking on that at this time.
Would you categorize yourself as neutral to the corn market?
Well, that's a good question. That's a loaded question. It's tough to tell currently. I don't necessarily argue with Greg's range that he gave earlier. I think whether we're talking cash or new crop, to me, if you end up having an acreage similar to Informa's, I think that suggests to me that we're probably not going to want to make any sales at this point. It doesn't mean I'm necessarily super bullish, but I do think the corn situation can change very quickly if you have 89 million acres of corn planted next year and then we have weather issues. This really warm winter that we're having right now kind of concerns a lot of people, including myself, as to what that's going to mean for us this next growing season. But, you know, obviously nobody really knows what the weather's going to do, so it's a tough call. But I'm not making any sales right now. Does that mean I'm bullish? Not really. I think that we're kind of in a range-bound situation until something happens, whether it be South American weather or, you know, a weather situation in the U.S. before the market really is able to break out of this range.
Greg, can you lay out the scenario for the cash grain situation for soybeans at this time, too?
Well, we've seen basis levels back off at the processor levels here in Illinois and Indiana. I think there are some beans moving. We got to $9 cash beans about a week and a half ago, and that triggered sales. We thought it might, and it did, and so we've seen basis levels back off. So, you know, I think it's the same situation. There's plenty of old crop corn and plenty of old crop beans out there. Farmers are just waiting for the right price. With beans, we had a nice three-week rally, and we got back up to three-month highs, and farmers let loose of the beans. And so now we've backed off since then. I think it's the same way in the corn market as well. You know, the farmer has an objective, and if we get close to that, I think you'll see farmers selling. Until we get to that point, you know, we haven't seen that in corn, but we have seen it in beans. And so as a result, we saw a break in both the futures and the basis. Now that we are at lower levels, we'll probably start to see, once the processors use up what they bought, we may see the processors come back and then see the basis move up a little bit. And as far as the futures are concerned, you know, it's basically, it's kind of tied to the weather. We're waiting to see how South American's crop develops, and they're just now finishing up planting, so we've got a long ways to go. It's too wet in the south. It's too dry in the north. But I think we proved here in the U.S. this past year, it really doesn't matter what kind of start you get off to. It matters how you finish. And so they may not be off to the most ideal start, but that late January, early February weather, when they're setting pods and filling pods, I think that will tell the tale down there.
What was your assessment of the bounce in the bean market today? Why did that happen on Thursday of this week?
Well, I think, number one, we've been down, we're down at the lower end of the range, for one thing. So farmers have stopped selling, U.S. farmers have stopped selling. I think with the Argentine devaluation, the traders were thinking that the Argentine farmers would immediately, you know, start selling corn and beans. And there was a little bit of uptick from what we hear in selling, but not a lot, not as much as probably what the traders were thinking. So I think it was a lot of, you know, buy the rumor, sell the fact type of thing. They anticipated, you know, the devaluation would be extremely negative, but we've been talking about that for, you know, a week or two, and we were talking about the cutting of the export taxes. So a lot of this has probably already been built in, and when you're at the lower end of the range, it's a little bit easier to bounce. Once we get back into the upper half of the range, and, you know, again, I don't want to say I'm bullish by any stretch, but maybe we can get back to the middle of the range that we've been trading in, you know, then we may see some farmers selling again. But at the lower end of the range, the farmers just haven't been too interested in selling at the bottom.
And where do you put the middle?
Well, March beans closed at somewhere around $8.78. $9 is obviously where they want to sell again, so that's probably the top end of the range. $8.50 is probably the bottom end of the range. So anything over $8.75, which we're, you know, is kind of the middle of the range, and Thursday's close was right there. So, you know, if we can get a little bit closer to the top end of that range, anything between $8.75 and $9, unless you want to hold on and bet on a weather problem in South America, which could happen or it could not. But given what we know today, anything between $8.75 and $9 is probably a good value for beans.
So this would be the third push, and I'll stay with you, Greg, for just a second and get an assessment from Matt, too. This would be the third push after the harvest season, but your expectation sounds like the first one went the highest. And this one will be the lowest of the three pushes. Is that right?
I would agree with that, yes. I think the farther along you get in the growing season down there, the more you know, the less chances there are for something, you know, unexpected to happen. So, yeah, I think farmers are starting to realize that the clock's ticking, and they're probably going to start lowering their sights a little bit.
Matt, clock's ticking. This push is one that producers should take advantage of?
Yeah, I think that it is. I mean, they definitely have been looking very hard at making sales. I think the tough thing, I pretty much agree with everything Greg's saying on the beans. As far as the moves and the way that they have gone, I think it's been tough for a producer. Last year, we got a huge move that nobody was really expecting. And I think every time this market pushes back over $9, a lot of these guys are sitting around thinking, well, gee whiz, maybe we're going to get what we got last year. We just had to be patient and wait on it. Well, as soon as we get over $9, it seems like people, instead of doing maybe a little more marketing than what they were thinking about doing, get a little bit bullish. And I think that if we get close to or over $9 basis to March, I think it's a good place to step in. I think the market showed us that we're not going to be able to get the exaggerated, what I call kind of a bailout move we've got the last couple of years. I think we should go ahead and be moving them.
Matt, I know, at least I think, that you probably have been running a pencil a little harder than you do in other parts of the year, like many farmers do at this time of year. What are the things when you're sitting down at your desk that you consider about your operation? Which numbers are you looking at more intensely as it relates to commodity marketing?
Well, I think one thing, you know, we definitely keep an eye on is the crude oil market, because it factors into so many different things, not just corn and bean prices, but obviously fertilizer prices. And so, you know, we keep a pretty close eye on that. We're watching, trying to figure out whether we want to contract diesel fuel out in the next fall even. And I think with crude oil prices where they were, it's something we've been looking at pretty closely. You know, do we want to go ahead and book anhydrous early? Because we're off $100 a ton since the fall. And at this point, we're not even really too interested in doing that, because we feel like there might be a little more weakness in that as well. So I think those are a lot of the things that we're looking at are our input prices, because, you know, obviously we can try to will the corn market to go higher, the bean market to go higher, but we can't have a whole lot of impact on that. But if we're a little more resourceful and a little bit better businessmen on the input side of things, we can get costs cut a little bit more than what we have the last couple of years. And it can at least give us a fighting chance if we do get some sort of a rally, and then are blessed with decent weather next summer and can have a decent crop.
These are the things that Gary Schnitke's been talking about all week long on the Illinois Farm Economics Summits. In particular, he talks about cash rent a lot, but some of the other input prices. Fuel is one of the larger price inputs. Seed costs are heavy, and so are fertilizer and chemical costs. So I think seed costs probably you've already done, I would guess, or really close. Fertilizer costs you're going to wait on. Are there things you think you're going to be able to do to help you out with your chemical?
You know, that's a good question, because I just visited with one of the co-ops today about chemicals, and it doesn't really look like there's a whole lot of price adjustment there that's going to be helping out a whole lot. You know, as far as the seed industry goes, I think pretty much across the board, it's fairly flat. You know, there's been some price reductions here and there. A lot of those are associated with, genetics that aren't labeled necessarily as being new. And so, you know, I think on our farm, we're definitely going to still try to be producing the most bushels that we possibly can, but we're certainly going to try to be as efficient and resourceful as we can possibly be, because, you know, I've been watching Gary's stuff and talking to Gary, and he makes some really valid points, because there are some things we can change and some things we can't. The unfortunate part with some of the cash rent situations is, as you know, you give it up and you may not ever get it back. So guys are trying to hold things together and figure out other ways that they can maybe cut costs to be able to, have that break-even price for corn not be maybe quite so high as what it was in 15.
Okay, so for the last few minutes here, I'd like each of you to think just a little bit about the last growing season, the 2015 cropping year, and some of the highlights of the year for you as it related to the crop and what it really might mean rolling into 2016. Greg, maybe we can start with you if you begin with the planting season and come forward.
Yep. Well, we came into the season with a 1.7 billion carryout. And coincidentally, that's about where we're going to go into this next growing season, a 1.7 billion carryout. So we've got plenty of old crop corn. So basically, that the market is going to be very comfortable and unwilling to rally the market very much unless they see some weather problems. And if you look at what the price did in 2015, it was very flat until the 2 weeks in July. There was not a chance to sell corn over $4 except for 2 weeks in July this year. And that was as a result of the very wet spring we had. The you know, May and early June, it was extremely wet in the eastern Corn Belt. And we didn't know if the western Corn Belt at that point would come out with enough bushels to offset the east. So that's why we got the rally. But once they started hearing, you know, the yield checks out west, the market kind of got comfortable again with the fact that there was going to be enough corn. And then we sold off and into the fall lows. So I think it could be something very similar to that again this year. We're starting with the same carryout. You know, we may need to try to buy a few acres into the spring, but once we get that out of the way, unless and until we have weather problems, the market's probably going to be pretty comfortable and unwilling to run the price up much above $4. So if we can get a chance to sell $4 cash corn for new crop, which would be like 420 futures, I think that is something that farmers need to take a look at and at least lock in some floors, because, you know, we are going to plant enough acres to ensure a decent carryover. But once we get them planted, it's all up to the weather after that.
Matt, your thoughts, and if nothing else, maybe you could pick up with the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour and what you thought was happening in the field and how it differed from that, if at all.
You know, obviously in the spring we just had pretty decent planting conditions for a lot of people, but then we transitioned into an extremely wet time period that ultimately robbed a lot of people of a lot of nitrogen later on in the year, especially in the eastern Corn Belt. It didn't have as profound of an impact as what we thought that it might. I agree with one of Greg's earlier statements that Indiana, Ohio would have to be adjusted lower. Now, I was not in those two states on the Pro Farmer Crop Tour, but I was in those two states working this past summer, and I can assure you that they had a lot of areas where the corn wasn't close to as good as even what they thought it was going to be, a pretty rough situation. And so, you know, we go on the Pro Farmer Crop Tour, and we felt like the Western Corn Belt was good, but maybe it wasn't good enough to counteract all the poor yields in the Eastern Corn Belt. So I was a little bit surprised. But then the more that I talked to producers with their harvest data, I realized that a lot of the guys especially in Northern Iowa and in Nebraska and Southern Minnesota and South Dakota, some of those guys had some yields that they hadn't seen before. So awfully good corn in those areas, and I think it counteracted, the Eastern Corn Belt quite a bit. And I think whenever you look, you know, a couple of years ago, we had a chance to sell over $5 beast corn in 14, and we had an enormous crop. And then this past summer, and as Greg alluded to, in the middle of the summer, we had a little rally there. We did have a chance to get up to 450 beast corn. Yeah, I don't know if we're ratcheting down 50 cents at a time, but I think if we get a chance to go ahead and sell $4 fall corn, I'm probably going to be a little bit more excited about doing something like that than what I would be doing at this level. But again, it's all going to depend on the individual producer and what their situation is, because we're just seeing a lot of different situations as far as the break-even prices, and we're trying to do the best we can with each one of those.
Both of you have talked a lot about corn for the 2015 growing season. Were you more surprised by the soybeans' ability to yield as well as it did in 2015 across the nation?
You know, whenever we were on the Pro Farmer Crop Tour, and I know I told you this, Todd, it was wet everywhere we went. So I was fairly certain they were going to have an awfully good crop in the Western Corn Belt. I wasn't so sure about my crop. We had a lot of beans that were knee-high that we were hoping would make 50 bushel, and then they made 65 to 70, and we were really about as surprised as anybody. There was a lot of beans that had a lot of stress early on, and I didn't think that they necessarily had the weather to be able to raise the sort of yields that we were able to come out with. But we had really good bean yields, and I know very few people throughout the Midwest that were disappointed in their bean yields.
I really thought we would see some fungal diseases and molds, sudden death syndrome and white stem, white mold and brown stem rot, those type of things with all the wet weather we had in May and June. And I know a lot of people put fungicides on, but even the people that didn't put fungicides on, the beans still yielded very well. And the ones that did put fungicides on yielded even better yet. So I was really amazed. I credit the seed companies. I think they've done a lot of development on seed corn and seed beans, and I think it paid off this year, because I can remember, 15, 20 years ago, if we would have had this kind of weather, I don't think we would have had the kind of yields in beans that we had this year.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Matt Bennett is from Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois. This has been the December 17 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.